Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. The property tax is one of Pennsylvania's most unpopular taxes. However, attempts to eliminate property taxes, or at least property tax reform, have been elusive in Pennsylvania. 3 years ago, a bill that would have done away with the property tax fell one vote short in the Senate. It's been resurrected with a significant difference this time. One of the main sponsors is Republican State Senator David Argo of Schuylkill County, who joins us on the line. Senator Argo, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. Senator, as I've mentioned in the introduction, efforts to eliminate or at least reform property taxes have failed numerous times over the past 40 years. And I talked about that bill that you were one of the main sponsors 3 years ago that fell one vote short. Why is it different this time?
Well, I think the voters have continued to complain about the issue. Certainly in central Pennsylvania, we saw a major shift. Senator Teplitz was a very vocal opponent of Senate Bill 76, I think at least in part because of this issue. He was replaced in that election by John DeSanto, who was a very strong proponent. And so in order to move this this issue ahead, and it's probably the most difficult issue I've ever worked on, we need 26 votes. And so we've been working on that practically every day.
So you think politically the landscape has changed?
Absolutely, yes.
So what about last fall's referendum? I mentioned that referendum, and it didn't get a whole lot of attention at the time, even though it passed by a pretty good margin here in Pennsylvania. What impact will that have on the property tax debate this time?
It gives us more options. Quite honestly, I prefer Senate Bill 76 as we tried it last time. But this time, if we don't have the votes for 76, it allows us to go for a plan B that would focus only on homeowners' property taxes. We heard last time some objections to, for some reason they pick on Walmart, and they say Walmart doesn't need property tax elimination, or vacation homes don't need property tax elimination. And so, as I said, it gives us options that we did not have before November.
Just for background purposes, explain what that referendum would do.
It essentially said you have the ability now, under the terms of the Constitution, to just eliminate property taxes for homeowners. We did not have that option before.
The challenge with property tax reform is that school districts raise about $14.4 billion from property taxes. That $14.4 billion has to be replaced. Now, how are you proposing to do that?
Yeah, I had a minister one time told me that, everyone wants to go to heaven, but no one wants to die. It's a little bit like that with property tax elimination. I think most people understand it's a terrible system. It has its roots in Pennsylvania dating back, I think, to the 1830s. The Senator Ament down in Lancaster County has done some additional research. I think he took it back to the 1600s. It's unfair. It's archaic. Certainly there has to be a better way to fund public schools than how many acres do you live on, what kind of house, how big, what kind of roof, did you fix the paint on your front door? I mean, that's nuts. And so in order to come up with the money to eliminate the property tax, to drive a stake through its heart so it never comes back, you need to look for broad-based taxes. Really, that leaves you with the income tax and the sales tax. And so what we said under Senate Bill 76 is put the sales tax on more items, boost it up a point to 7%, and then also increase the personal income tax. It's currently at 3.07. In order to eliminate the property tax, it would require an increase from 4.95 to 4.95.
And I don't think that most Pennsylvanians would disagree with you that it is an archaic tax, a tax that they don't like. As I said, probably the most unpopular tax in Pennsylvania. But then when they hear the details of increasing the sales tax, expanding sales tax on items that can be subject to the sales tax, increasing the income tax, then you get some people who say, well, what about me in particular? And they kind of look at their own situation and say, whoa, I don't know if I go for this or not.
Oh, yeah. And, I had people at some point say, really? Sales tax on caskets? And one of the advocates for the bill said, yeah, but you're only going to die once. You know, property taxes are forever. And there's no doubt that today, seniors living on fixed income, people are being driven out of their homes. You know, when they paid for their house 30, 40, 50 years ago, they had no idea what kind of school property taxes they'd be paying in their 60s, their 70s, their 80s, and their Social Security just doesn't stretch that far. That's why this is such an unfair tax. That's why we need to, really replace the current model.
But how do you get those people on board? Because obviously there will be, and I hate to use these terms, but it's been used over and over, and it gives people a clear indication of what may happen, is that there will be winners, meaning there will be some people who will pay less in property tax, but there will be losers, renters, for example, who will pay more than what they're paying now because they are not paying the property tax, or at least not directly. So what do you say to those people?
We've done some studies. One of the things we believe Senate Bill 76 would do is turn renters into owners. That's not just good for them. They'll actually be able to afford a house now because they won't be paying that terrible property tax. And, you know, that's good for them. That's good for the community. People who own homes tend to take better care of the house, and so we believe it's win-win.
When you say that you'll turn them into homeowners, in what way? Basically, you're talking about that there will be some economic benefits to this, and the people who are renting now maybe can afford a house, right?
Absolutely. That's what our studies show.
In what way?
Exactly the way we said. The property tax, right now, the renters are paying it. They may not get that nasty bill in the middle of the summer, but it's certainly, you know, the landlords aren't paying it for them. It's a part of their rent. And so if indeed you take that cost away, we believe that more people will be able to go out and buy a home. And it's just, I think it's a more fair, it's a more logical way of funding the public schools.
Our guest during this portion of the program is Republican State Senator David Argo of Schuylkill County. We're talking about his Senate Bill 76, which would eliminate property taxes, replace property taxes with an increased sales tax, expand the sales tax, increased income tax as well. If you have a question or a comment, what do you think about this? Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalk. WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Senator, you know, we can talk a lot about how unpopular the tax is and the different ways it can be replaced. But there are school districts and organizations that represent schools that oppose eliminating property taxes completely. And one reason they give is that they say the property tax is reliable and that income and sales sales taxes can fluctuate depending on the health of the economy. And I think everyone kind of goes back to 2008 when the economy tanked and would look at what an income or what a sales tax would bring in at that time. School districts seem to like that reliability, even though we know every year when they have to raise that sales, that property tax, they don't like it.
Yeah, what's stable about the property tax, what's predictable about the property tax, is that if you don't pay it, you lose your house. I mean, is that really what we want to, base our public education system on? And so, believe me, I've had long talks with the School Boards Association and the state teachers' unions. I know they don't like this idea. They prefer the current model, as unfair as it is. But, you know, in the district that I represent, in Berks County and Schuylkill County, literally, I can't go anywhere without people talking to me about this. When I'm at the gas station, when I'm at Walmart, when I'm at a Cub Scout meeting, last year I had a flat tire. Guy came to fix it because I was in a hurry. I didn't have the time to do it myself. And honest to God, the guy said to me, and I didn't know he knew who I was. He said, yeah, I'll fix your tire. Now, about my property taxes, I mean, I have never, ever worked on an issue that has so much public support.
Okay, we understand that, but we have to make sure it's workable and that the money is there. And if the school districts are saying, we don't know about this, they're the ones that are going to have to deal with this money situation.
Now, we have worked with the Appropriations Committee. We've worked with the Independent Fiscal Office. We believe that the numbers do work. It took us a while to get to the right number. We've taken our time on this. We believe in it. It even builds up a bit of a rainy day fund because we understand that, yes, there is some fluctuation in the economy with sales tax and income tax. But also remember, Scott, you know, we trust the sales tax. We trust the sales tax and the income tax. That funds most of the state general fund budget. And so I think it's kind of hypocritical for some of our opponents to say, yeah, you know, it's okay for state government, but don't do that for local school districts.
Mm. And by the way, just to clarify, a quick question, we're just talking about property taxes for schools, not counties by some chance.
Absolutely. I've had county commissioners that have come to me and said, please include us. We think this bill is already complicated enough and difficult enough, and so maybe someday we'll get to county taxes, but right now this focus is just on school district property taxes because we believe that's where the main problem lies.
Let's go to Brian in Camp Hill. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.
So my question is regarding the possible transition of renters into possible homeowners.
Sure.
And I'm curious to know how that study was done, and if that study assumed the fact that this would move the savings that the homeowner of the rental property would have to the renter, and also I do believe that this would probably hurt lower income families and lower income individuals by raising the income tax and sales tax.
Thank you very much for your call. Brian has anticipated at least one of my questions. We'll leave the second part, but if you would address how the study was conducted as to how renters would save enough money to be able to become homeowners.
You know, it's a detailed study, and if the caller wants to reach out to my Harrisburg office today, tomorrow, whenever, we'll be happy to share the results. The same thing with you, Scott. But, I think a lot of it is common sense. You know, people, whether they're low income, medium income, upper income, the sales tax, the income tax, they're connected to your ability to pay. If you can't afford to go out and buy the new car or the new mattress, you don't do it. With property taxes, you're going to get whacked with that bill that frequently goes up, whether you can pay it or not. And if you don't pay it, what happens? You'll lose your house. That's why, you know, we have support from Republican and Democratic senators from all over Pennsylvania. As I said, we came one short last time. If the lieutenant governor would have voted with us instead of voted against us, we would have sent this over to the House of Representatives for the first time in history. I mean, I have people back in the district saying, you know, what's taking you guys so long? Well, what's taking us so long is that, you know, you can have the best idea in the world, but if you don't have 26 votes in the Senate, you're not going to move the issue ahead. But no, I'll be happy to share the results of the study.
But let me go to the second part of Brian's question, because this has been one of the criticisms of increasing the sales tax and expanding the sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the items that you want to expand to be taxable, include clothing and footwear costing more than $50.
Yes.
Non-essential food, diapers, caskets you mentioned, legal
yes.
services, and there are many others. And some would argue that will hit the poor disproportionately because, as you said, it will be based on your income, your ability to pay. If you have a smaller income, there are some things, you know, now it wouldn't be taxed at such a rate. So what about that hitting the poor?
I think that you mentioned the exemptions. You know, it's clothing over $50, non-essential foods, not on the WIC list, okay, to use the technical term. And so the other option, of course, is to not put the sales tax on those items, but then you have to raise the rate of the income tax or the rate of the sales tax by more, because it's very important to us that the numbers work. My kids and I, my wife, we all went through the public schools at Tomaqua High. My parents actually taught there for a while. So I don't want to ruin the public schools. I want to make them better. So what we have to do is replace dollar for dollar of the existing property taxes. So if Camp Hill or Tomaqua or Hazleton gets $10 or $20 million a year from property taxes under our system, they would get the same amount, dollar for dollar replacement. And then there's a cost of living built into the bill. We understand prices go up, and so every year school districts would get a little bit more.
JJ is in York County. JJ, you're on the air.
Yes, I want to commend Senator Argyle. I've been following it. I voted for the referendum on the ballot. It was in, what, November?
Yes.
And I thank God you stepped up to the plate. Look at all the other states. They've got 7%. Maryland. You know, we don't pay as much in sales tax as we do in property tax. And I'm a multi-property owner in York County. And everything he says is so right. And 3.07% on the income tax is ridiculous. What is that for $10,000? So you're making $70,000. How much? It's a minuscule amount to pay extra on your personal income. And taxes could go up, sales tax could go to 6 or 7. And I'm fine with that because you will still save in the long run if you were a homeowner. I'm sure you agree.
All right. Thank you very much for your call,
not
JJ.
Not only do I agree, but both of the senators from York County agree. Senator Regan has been very helpful on this issue. Senator Wagner is a co-sponsor of the bill. And so, that's how we're assembling the 26 votes we need, vote by vote, all across the state, Republican and Democrat.
Jeff is in Palmyra. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for this show. So the increase in sales tax, I really think that would just be a drop in the bucket. I don't know that that's really a valid argument against people with lower incomes, since it's not going to change their bills that much. But public schools already have a very difficult time with funding. Teachers are having to pay out of pocket for different things. What's the potential detriment to public school funding by eliminating the school property tax and switching to more of a sales tax?
Thank you very much, call Jeff.
I think the biggest is fear of the unknown. You know, this is the system we know. As unfair as it is, warts and all, we've been living with it since the 1830s. Your senator, Senator Fulmer from Lebanon County, is one of our most aggressive proponents of this bill. I'd be lost without Mike Fulmer. And wherever we go, we hear the same arguments, pro and con. We just think it's time to bring this up to a vote, get it through the Senate. I hope to God we have the votes in the House so the governor can sign this. We've had some interesting discussions with the governor. I'd love to say he's prepared to sign it. We have not yet secured that promise, but we're not giving up.
Senator, we'll take more phone calls in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest during this portion of the program is Republican State Senator David Argyle of Schuylkill County, sponsor of Senate Bill 76, which would eliminate property taxes, replace them with an increased sales and income tax, expand some items that are subject to sales tax. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Senator, I wanted to follow up a little bit on Jeff's question when he talked about school funding. This may be the bottom line in that even though the property tax is unpopular, a lot of people don't like it, a lot of people may lose their homes as a result of it. As far as funding schools, we have had a real issue in this state where, you know, some school districts get enough funding from the state, others don't. There's a real disparity here. So is there a guarantee that if we would make this major change, that school districts would get the kind of money that they need, the kind of money that is fair when they have poor kids or poor families in those districts, or that there are some bigger needs than, say, some other districts?
Yeah, the Appropriations Committee has told me in no uncertain terms the numbers work. The Independent Fiscal Office has done study after study after study at my request, after Representative Cox, who's been leading the effort in the House, the same results. The one thing that we didn't talk about, Scott, if a school district wants more, we had some long discussions with the people who first wrote the bill. And understand, you know, I'm one of the sponsors of the bill. I didn't write it. This bill was put together by citizen activists, taxpayer groups, more than 80 of them from all across the state. And when we asked them that question, they said, well, what do other states do? And we looked and we looked and we said, well, other states have decided that, and it's strange for Pennsylvania, we've never had that done here, but in other states, when a school district wants more than they can afford to do, they put it on the ballot. They ask their local voters for permission. Do you want the new advanced Latin class? Do you want the new football field? Whatever your needs are, if you can't afford to do them, put them on the ballot. And that's an important part of 76. It would allow them to tack on a little bit more income tax for their school district if the voters say that's okay. That's a radical concept for Pennsylvania. Most other states have been doing it for decades, and so that's an important part of the bill. And it was agreed to by the taxpayer groups that began the draft of this issue. Seems like a long time ago. We've been working at this for a long time.
I realized that you didn't write this, but this has become your signature issue. I do want to switch those, which you just caught, and it would be radical for Pennsylvania to offer more referendums. My guess is that voters probably would like that. Would that take legislation, though, that more issues could be put on the ballot for voters to decide?
Well, if we wanted to do it for everything, yes, that would take a constitutional amendment. If we want to do it only for school district funding, we believe we can do it through Senate Bill 76. It would not require additional legislation.
Let's take some more phone calls. Let's go to, we have Paul in Fairfield. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, welcome.
I'm a little concerned that the property tax, they sort of guess at the value of your home, and if they're within 10%, they say that's great. If I guessed at your income and got it off by 15-20%, you'd say I'm taxing you unfairly. But then again, if we turn the school funding over to the state, who has given us the teacher pension problem, then that, again, it's a little hard for us to trust the state legislature to fund. And some school districts have deferred maintenance, while other school districts have done building projects. And so how can we trust the state legislature to really fund going forward the school districts fairly? Why don't you leave it to individual districts to levy the income tax instead of levying the property tax?
Great question. Thank you very much for your call. And before you answer that, Senator, let me follow up by, a related question. If this were to become law, would the majority of funding, all the funding, a percentage of funding come from the state to local school districts, or would local school districts still be collecting that income tax, that sales tax in their county?
The lion's share would be coming from the state. Some of the local taxes that school districts, non-property taxes, they would continue, and so we went after every possible issue we could on this, and I've heard the local control argument, but I just think that this local tax, this property tax, is so unfair. We need a new model, and as far as allowing every school district to set their own rate, we think that would be a nightmare for businesses. That if the personal income tax was X in Hazleton and Y in Tamaqua and Z in Schuylkill Haven, we just don't think that would work. And so what we've tried to do is to create as much uniformity under this as possible. And we thought also what was very important was that it's property tax elimination. Some of your older viewers, guys like me, would remember, Governor Casey tried to do this back in the 1980s, but it was a partial reduction in property taxes. And so people were guaranteed a reduction in their property taxes. They were also guaranteed an increase in sales and income. Well, when they put that on the ballot, it was the worst defeat for a referendum question in the history of Pennsylvania. People don't trust a partial reduction in their property taxes. What that looks to them like is, oh yeah, you're going to reduce it for a couple of years, and then it's going to come back. Meanwhile, those other tax increases, they're going to stay permanent. And so that was a deal that we rejected from day one. We said, if we're going to do this, we're going to kill off the school district property tax for all time, so it can never, ever come back. that is something that at town hall meeting after town hall meeting, I mean, we get hundreds of people out on this, and ask your friends at PCN what happens when they bring it up during their call-in shows. I'm told their phones light up like a Christmas tree, and so I think we know where the public is on this one, but it's taken some of the more organized groups in Harrisburg a little bit more time to think about this.
You used the word trust, and that comes up to the second part, or relates to the second part of the caller's question. And that is, he's concerned about whether the legislature will fund the school districts fairly. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is the legislature doesn't exactly have the best record, legislature and the governor, of coming up with a budget on time and being able to agree on these issues. I mean, just the past 3 years, our budgets have been late. We've had school districts that have said, you know, if we don't, that first year of the Wolf administration, for example, when it went to 9 months, that there wasn't a budget, school districts were saying, listen, we're going to shut down classes if we don't get some money from the state. There's where the trust issue comes in. There probably are a lot of people out there who don't trust your colleagues, maybe even you, and the sure. governor's office to come up with this.
And this is not a new issue. I've taught some part-time classes at Penn State in Harrisburg and back in Schuylkill and Berks counties. And when I ask about trust in government, I say, you know, what's the problem? Students will say, oh, you know, we didn't like what George Bush did in Iraq, or maybe some of them remember Watergate. I said, read the Declaration of Independence. You know, Pennsylvanians have never trusted their government. And so this is not a new issue. But on this issue, we believe that we have resolved it so that under Senate Bill 76, every school district would get dollar-for-dollar replacement, regardless of whether the state budget was done on time or not. And what's interesting about those state budget debates, you know, no one ever remembers the ones we did on time. You know, no drama. House passed it, Senate passed it, governor signed it. We've actually done that a good bit, but you're right. Under this governor, we've had some huge budget battles, some late budgets. Everybody remembers those. I guess that's just human nature.
We have some emails. Virginia asks, currently disabled veterans are exempt from paying property taxes, as are several other groups of people. This is due to the limited income of these groups. The tax dollars lost from the lack of property taxes would have to be made up by some other tax or tax increase. Would you please address if there would be similar tax relief for disabled veterans and other groups in this proposed bill?
Well, if you're already eliminated from property tax, then of course your elimination holds. This would extend that elimination to everyone, regardless of their station in life. We believe that a partial elimination just for some folks. Some people said, "Oh, just do it for seniors." Well, then you're putting the cost on just people coming out of school in their 20s and their teens, and we didn't think that was fair. And so what we're trying to do is eliminate the school district property tax for everybody in Pennsylvania. And from what I hear at my town hall meetings, the sooner the better.
But, you know, I think the point that Virginia is making, that right now that there are groups like disabled veterans who are exempt from the property tax, but would their income taxes increase?
I guess that would depend on their station in life. But again, I think in order to reach the goal of property tax elimination, the shift to sales and income is just based on people's ability to pay. I think it's a much better way, a much fairer way to fund the public schools.
Tom and Carlisle ask, will renters now take a double hit on taxes? Will renters see a mandatory reduction in their rents that covered the property taxes, or will the landlord just get a windfall?
We've looked at some studies on that. We believe that it would at least stabilize rents. We believe that it's going to be up to the market. If one landlord reduces rents, well, the guy across the street, the one up the street, you know, people talk, people see, you know, advertisements. We believe that it's going to be up to the market. We did look at a possible way, because, I mean, a big piece of people's rent is taxes, okay? Those landlords aren't paying them out of the goodness of their heart. It's a cost of doing business. We looked at a way to try to mandate it. We could not find a way to do that constitutionally. This is one of those that is going to have to be up to the free market. There is no way that government could come in and require rent payments to to decrease because of the property tax elimination.
But
we can look at that.
Doesn't that go, and we have another caller asked this question, doesn't that go back to your argument that the money that renters would save, that they would be able to, you know, save and buy a house? How are they going to save if they're not seeing any reduction in their rents?
Well, if they're not going up year after year after year, for a lot of people, that would be a savings.
So you're counting on the landlords, the owners of the property, not increasing rents.
We're counting on the free market.
Sammy is in Carlisle. Sammy, you're on the air. Hello, Sammy. What his question was is, what are other states doing? I'm always interested in this question.
Yeah.
Because I know that, you know, you always study and research what other states have done.
Yes. Some states rely on their property tax to a much lesser degree. I've had story after story about, you know, my cousin from this state and my mother-in-law from this state. Oh my gosh, her property tax is next to nothing. I don't think anyone has gone all the way to eliminate it, and so that is novel. But there is no doubt that in other states, income taxes are higher, sales taxes are higher, property taxes are lower. The only state that we saw that came close to this was in Michigan. They made a stab at it, and it was essentially a legislature of one party, governor of another party. They get this now. This is great. The legislature eliminated the property tax. Say, hooray. They didn't replace it,
yeah.
And they thought that, well, the governor, they were trying to embarrass the governor. Governor will never sign it. The governor called their bluff. He signed it. Then they had to go back and find a new way to replace the property tax. So they actually have a state property tax now in Michigan rather than a local property tax. Maybe not quite as unfair, but still, to me, unfair. So we don't want to go that route. We are replacing school district property taxes dollar for dollar with that cost of living increase every year that we talked about before.
I wondered if you're going to mention Michigan, where they did it without that safety net. And there were a lot of surprises there.
Yeah, they never thought the governor was going to sign that bill, and he called their bluff.
Joe is in Dallas Town. Joe, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
This argument and issue is one of my favorite. I've been talking about this for a long time. And what I wanted to point out is that to reach a resolution with the people and with the legislature, if we would stop calling this a property tax, it is property-based school tax. And I go back more than 20 years in York County. I don't have a state perspective, but the property tax is based on the needs of the school districts. I'm concerned that we haven't done anything to reduce the school expenses, which is how we get the property tax or school tax assessed on the citizens. So could we address that in a way that we stop calling it property tax? Because I live in York County, York Township. I have a great township. When they assess property tax, I'm glad to pay it because I get good services for it. But I have a real problem with the school district assessing non-educational needs, school buildings, teacher salaries. If we could work towards reducing the school expense, we would reduce the school tax.
Now, great question, and one that has come up a lot. One of my town hall meetings back in Berks County, I think it was in Hamburg, I had a Pennsylvania Dutch farmer with a bit of an accent who pointed out to me that, you know, if you don't resolve the spending issue, you haven't fixed the problem, and you're absolutely right. I think this bill works in two ways. One, today, if a group in the school district wants more whatever, they go to the school board and they say, here's what we want. And the school board can say, sure, okay, we're going to fund that program. Up goes the property tax. For reasons that we talked about before, they won't be able to do that anymore. They will have the option to put additional income tax on the ballot. The people decide, yes or no. I think that's a great solution. The other part of that is we often hear about unfunded mandates. Well, Harrisburg made us do this. Harrisburg made us do that. Oh, my gosh, under Senate Bill 76, we are going to fund our mandates. What a concept. And now, think about this. group comes to Harrisburg, we want the schools to do more, more, more. The state can say yes, but this time, if they say yes, they're going to have to fund it. And so they're not going to be just sending the cost downriver. I think that this is a much fairer way to fund the public schools.
We have a listener who asks, isn't there a risk of referendums leading to less revenue, since it would be tempting for people to just say no, regardless of the need?
I think in my experience in other states, some of them pass, some of them don't. It depends on the district. It depends on the voters. It depends on the program itself. And so people are going to have to go out and make the case. This is why we want this for our school district. That's the democratic system that we live in. And again, I know it's radical for Pennsylvania, but a lot of other states have been doing this for a long time.
Another listener says, so what the senator proposes is a tax on non-essential foods, which covers everything not on the women's, infants, children, WIC list. So this means that everything that regular people eat will be taxed because people over the age of 5 do not eat baby formulas, baby cereals, baby foods, and the like. The only foods on the WIC list that regular people do eat are fruit juices, milk, and eggs. Under this plan, a chicken dinner would be taxed. A plate of spaghetti without meat would be taxed. Beans and rice would also be taxed. People need to understand that.
I think if you looked at that list, there's things on that list that you and I eat every day. And again, you know, we can eliminate that part of the sales tax, but then people are going to be paying more income tax somewhere else. So, you know, it's a based on compromise. Originally, some people wanted to put it all on income tax. Some people wanted to put it all on sales tax. We believe this is a realistic compromise that, again, reimburses that school district dollar for dollar so that they can continue their programs.
Let's go to, let's see, we have Melody in Carlisle. Melody, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Yes,
I
welcome.
Have 2 points. The first of which is that the majority of people who own property are not receiving income from the fact that they're owning property. If they are receiving income, it's because they're doing something with the property. Maybe they're farming. Maybe they run a business on it. But they're already paying taxes on the things that they're doing economically with their land. So just taxing someone for having property doesn't seem fair to me in the first place. And I'm seeing it hurt older people especially. My second point, I'm a teacher, and I love children. I love the work that is being done in school districts, and it needs money to do it. And I think a lot of people believe in funding the schools for the benefit of the children. But what I wish I saw more of is people believing in the fact that well-funded schools benefits the entire community, not just by investing in our future, but by having an educated populace, a good voting populace, and by showing people that we value the people who live here. And I would be happy to pay more income tax, pay more sales tax, to know that I'm investing in my community and investing in the children. And I see this as a fair way to spread it out so that it's not just hitting the people who own property, but so that we are all contributing. We can all then become vested people in what's going on in the school district. And I think that sense of ownership, that sense of pride in where our money is going, could be really beneficial to the communities at large in Pennsylvania.
Melody, maybe you should run for office. Thank you very much for your call.
And can I say ditto?
I'm joking with her. But
that was very well said.
It really was. All right, let's take another call from Joel in York. Joel, you're on the air.
Thanks, Scott. It's nice to talk to both you and the senator. I'm a sitting school board member. I was on for one term, went off for a couple years to run for public office. And believe me, the issue was school property tax in my district. It was absolutely the number one issue. It remains that way. As a sitting school board member, however, I would say I'm very much in favor of this for a couple reasons. The most important of which is that it puts the responsibility for funding education where the Constitution says it belongs, and that's at the state level. It really was never intended to be a district level responsibility to raise money. It's their responsibility to deliver education. And when we see the disparities around the state, it really kind of underscores just how skewed things have become. The second thing is, if we ever really want resolution to things like the pension crisis and the inequities in education funding, it needs to be done at the state level. We had a costing out study 10 or 12 years ago that really laid down a pretty good estimate of what it should cost to educate kids in Pennsylvania. If we take a look at that now, the disparities are absolutely unbelievable. Anywhere from close to $40,000 a student to less than $10,000 throughout the Commonwealth. That is absolutely inequitable. There is no way we can justify that kind of variation. And unless somebody at the state level looks at it and helps level it out, it'll never happen. So those are some of the reasons why I favor school property tax elimination and funneling the money through our through an education operating fund to level out the expenditures and to get folks in some of these overspending districts to rethink the way they educate their kids.
Joel, thank you very much for your call. Senator?
Joel, I wish you would be able to convince the leaders of the Statewide School Boards Association that you're right and that I'm right. They are not fans of this. I think a lot of it, as I'd said earlier, is just fear of change. I believe this is a much fairer way to fund the public schools. And yeah, please talk to the PSBA because they're one of our biggest opponents.
Senator, we're almost out of time for this portion of the show. So where does this go now?
It's in the Senate Finance Committee. We have spoken to the chairman of the committee. We've spoken to the majority leader. We've spoken to the president pro tem, Senator Scavello. This is a huge issue up in the Poconos where he represents. I think he talks to Jake Corman on this issue about every 10 minutes. We're very anxious to move the bill as soon as humanly possible.
Senator Jake Corman, the Senate Majority Leader. Thank you very much, Senator David Argo, for being with us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. The special election in Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district is the center of the political universe today. Republican Rick Saccone and Democrat Connor Lamb are competing to replace anti-abortion Republican Congressman Tim Murphy, who resigned after word came out that he encouraged his mistress to have an abortion. President Trump campaigned for Saccone last weekend, and almost, well, I'm seeing figures of from $16 to $18 million have been spent on the campaign, much of it from outside the district. All for a term in office that will last 9 months. NPR's Scott Detrow is following today's special election and is in that district and joins us on the line. Scott, how are you?
Well, hey, Scott, we can keep talking about property taxes if you want. I just bought a house for the first time, so I suddenly have a lot of opinions on this topic.
What state? what state you buy a house in?
Washington, D.C.
Okay, so you're in the district. What are taxes like in Washington?
We'll find out.
All right.
Good.
So give me a sense of what it's like on the ground in this district today.
Like you said, it's been the center of the political universe. You had President Trump come into town over the weekend. You have signs all over the place. Every time I've walked past the television, every time I've turned on the television, I don't just see one ad. I see two or three or four ads for this race. And a lot of them feature Connor Lamb. They're either ads from the Lamb campaign promoting him, or there are these outside Republican groups who have spent more than $10 million trying to attack the Democrat and tie him to people like Nancy Pelosi, national Democrats, who aren't quite as popular in this district as Connor Lamb seems to be.
Why is this district considered a barometer for President Trump? And maybe control of the House once the rest of the country votes on their congressional districts.
I think there's two ways you need to look at it. One is looking at it in the context of all the other special elections that have happened as well. And while Republicans have not lost any of these special elections on the House, of course they lost a Senate seat in Alabama, which was a huge deal. Democrats have consistently done double digits better than they typically do in these districts. These have all been deep red districts, but Democrats have come pretty close. And this trend, especially if it continues today, shows that Democrats are motivated to show up at the polls, they're energized, and that in a lot of the races that are a lot closer, they could really flip a lot of seats this fall. But the 18th itself is interesting for two reasons. One, because Trump won it by about 20 points, and it's been so solidly Republican that Democrats didn't even bother to run a candidate the last two elections. And yet there's a real chance of Connor Lamb winning this seat tonight. Polls show it very close. I've seen some polls with Saccone with a slight lead, with Lamb with a slight lead, but it's very neck and neck.
And, you know, it's been portrayed by the national media in particular, and a lot of, you know, the pundits and a lot of those who are, you know, really, they work in politics and study this all the time, trying to portray it as a barometer for President Trump. So yeah. Is it?
Maybe. I mean, it's complicated, right? Because you have the Democratic campaign doing everything it can to make this not about President Trump, because if it's a referendum on President Trump, his popularity's dropped a little bit here, but he's still pretty popular here, especially in the southern part of the district. The 18th includes some of the southern Pittsburgh suburbs, which are higher education, higher income. These are the types of places where a lot of voters have just been repelled by President Trump, and I'm really curious to see the turnout there. But the southern part of the district, Washington County, Greene County, these are places where President Trump is deeply popular, and that's why Rick Saccone's campaign is saying, hey, if you like Donald Trump, you need to vote for me because I'll have his back in Congress, whereas Conor Lamb would not. So is it a barometer? Again, I think if it's a really close race or if the Democrats win, you have to take into account what has happened over the last year in places like this to see the results shift so much.
The two candidates, Republican Rick Saccone, a state representative at this point, there are reports that Republicans on the national level aren't very happy with him. He hasn't raised near the money that Conor Lamb has on the Democratic side. And some Republicans have even come right out and said he's not a good candidate. What about Rick Saccone as a candidate?
I think the fundraising is something that really frustrated national Republicans, and that's why you've seen outside groups spend so much money. It's an inverse picture. On the Democratic side, you haven't had a ton of outside spending, but the Lamb campaign has raised a lot and spent a lot. It's the opposite on the Republican side. Saccone has not raised that much, and that's why he's getting all this air support from outside groups. I'm not sure how many voters walk around saying, well, I looked at that last filing report, and this guy just isn't raising money. How can you take him seriously? He's an aggressive campaigner. What really struck me when I was watching him Saturday night at this rally with President Trump is how much Saccone tried to act like Trump, tried to channel Trump, getting the crowd to boo the media. I saw a quote from his rally last night saying that Democrats don't love America, don't love God, don't like Donald Trump. See, he's trying to kind of tap into that us against them culture warrior stuff. Works really well when you're President Trump. I'm not sure it works as well when you're a state representative trying to, you know, fill that role.
Conor Lamb is a former prosecutor. He has backed off on supporting Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader in the House, who Republicans seem to dislike in particular. I think he's been described as kind of a moderate Democrat at this point. Would be the kind of Democrat that could be elected. Now, I should add that Democrats outnumber Republicans as far as voter registration goes in this congressional district. So what about Conor Lamb? What can you tell me about him?
Yeah, that's a good point on the voter registration. I think a lot of people are registered Democrat in this district who probably haven't, you know, the type of people say, well, I'm a Democrat, but I've been voting Republican lately. And you say, well, when did you first start voting Republican? Oh, Ronald Reagan. Okay, not quite sure you count as a Democrat at this point, but a lot of them still are on paper. Lamb has a very good resume for a candidate. He's a younger candidate. This is his first time running. He's in his early 30s. He's got a military background. Then he worked as a federal prosecutor. And because of that, the campaign has tried very hard to keep the focus on his resume, to keep the focus on the very scripted side. And a lot of his campaign appearances have not been broadcast to the media beforehand. They're trying to keep the message in their own hands because they know that reporters will ask them about, well, where are you on guns? Where are you on Nancy Pelosi? Where are you on this particular Democratic issue? And the less that he can talk about ties to the national party and national leaders, probably the better for his campaign.
So, Scott Detrow, we have about 30 seconds. What will you be looking for today?
The turnout in the northern part of the district, the suburbs, I mean, if that is off the charts like it has been in previous special elections, I think that continues the trend of suburbs in particular turning against President Trump.
You're talking about Westmoreland County? What other counties?
I'm talking about Allegheny County, Mount Lebanon, places like that. The part of the district where Connor Lamb is from, I think I'm really interested in. And then also the places like Greene County, Washington County, is that closer to a 50-50 split in places that Trump beat Clinton, 70-30 in 2016?
Scott Detrow from NPR, thanks very much for being with us today.
Nice to talk to you, Scott.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, a proposal relating to puppy mills in Pennsylvania. It would change where pet shops and where places you can buy little dogs, puppies, where you could do that. That's coming up on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in.